I'm Kurt Anderson, and this is Studio 360. Have you ever been on vacation and seen a landscape or a breathtaking sunset that you had to take a picture of, and then you got home and your picture looked kind of ordinary and crappy, pretty much like any old sunset, and not even as good as the real thing? Well, that happened to Clifford Ross. But Ross is a painter and professional photographer. So instead of just tossing the pictures out or stuffing them into a drawer, Ross spent the next 5 years of his life trying to get them right. And in the process, he may have reinvented the camera as we know it. Andrew Adam Newman has the story.
This is a story about art and science and technology. But most of all, this is a romance.
Basically, I fell in love with a mountain.
Clifford Ross was on vacation in Colorado in 2001 when he first saw Mount Sopris. It's part of the Rockies, but rises dramatically above nearby mountains.
It's actually a twin-peaked mountain, not unlike Cézanne's Mont Saint-Victoire, but it is a mountain that, for a lot of the view, sits proud as a simple diamond. So it's iconic. There's a simplicity to it, and it has a real grandeur to it, and it really is a sort of a classic 19th century sublime image.
Ross is a landscape photographer, but when he's on vacation, he takes snapshots like everybody else. He took snapshots of the mountain, then had them developed in a one-hour place when he got back to New York. He couldn't wait to show his friends.
No one else thought it was even remotely interesting and certainly didn't feel my passion for the mountain. And I thought, well, something's wrong with this. And I realized it was functioning the way snapshots do. It was helping me remember, but there were no facts in it for other people to enjoy.
Ross returned to the mountain with a fancy camera that had larger 4x5-inch film. But he wasn't happy with those images either. So he returned with an even bigger camera. But
there was no camera that existed that could capture as much detail as I felt was critical to what the mountain was about. And I didn't want to shortchange a viewer that couldn't get to the mountain. By January 2002, I was trying to figure out how to build a camera to capture it properly.
Not that he even knew where to start. He had never invented anything.
I became interested in how inventors functioned, and I was studying people like the Wright brothers.
He also began buttonholing scientists and new media types, people like Red Burns. She chairs the Interactive Telecommunications Program at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts.
At one point, I think when he was building his camera, he came to talk about it, and I kept saying, we're not in that business here. We don't work primarily in still photography, so I don't know why you're here. And he kept saying, well, let me tell you what it is. But this was more than still photography. That's what I came to understand. And the man is so infectious, he is so creative, that he completely pulled me into his orbit.
The back is a very modified Fairchild aerial camera. It was built in 1943 and could very well have literally flown over Dresden. This was used during World War II, and it was used for aerial reconnaissance.
It's no coincidence that Ross was setting out to soup up a camera that's an antique. They don't make cameras that big anymore. It uses ginormous 9x18-inch film. He developed a system of mirrors and a microscope that lets him focus on objects miles away. He named the camera the R1, and he holds several patents on it. 2 years after first laying eyes on it, he returned to Mount Sopris and took hundreds of pictures. He tried to scan the negatives, but the files were so large they crashed a couple of photo labs. The final prints are 6x11 feet. Each dominates a wall in his studio. The resolution is years ahead of digital photography. You can see individual trees on the mountain ridge 7 miles away, but you can also make out a bird and individual blades of grass 100 feet away. The photo seems to recede deeper and deeper and deeper into the wall. It doesn't feel like looking at a photo of a mountain. It feels like looking at the mountain itself.
Nature is so filled with detail, and it is so immersive in its power that your mind reels with the quantity of information and its beauty. And, you know, in a simple way, I'm trying to replicate that.
Still, a lot of photographers today deliberately jostle their cameras while they shoot. That knocks the subject out of focus and makes pictures that are more impressionistic. So a photo that tries to do just the opposite can strike some critics as more fussy than artful. That's why a review in the New York Times paid the Mountain series a backhanded compliment, saying they're, quote, worth seeing if only for their amazing technical properties. In fact, it's the technical properties that have got the interest of scientists and the entertainment world.
This is Carl Digert, and I'm a scientist at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Digert helped develop a camera that points back at the space shuttle to provide images of it from space. So why is a guy like that interested in a guy making pretty pictures of a mountain?
You see more and more detail in the picture as you move in. That is essential to something like examining this imaging on the space shuttle. The failures are small, and yet you want to maintain a sense of context, what part of the wing you're looking at as you drill in.
Ross started holding powwows for scientists and artists to start talking about the future of high-res imagery. They called them Big Picture Summits. The group had planned to reinvent how they made images, but instead, they began to reinvent how we looked at them. They came up with what they call the i3 Media and Digital Cyclorama. It's like a round movie theater, where pictures or movies are projected on walls that go nearly all the way around. So instead of sitting, you walk toward whatever catches your eye. Filmmakers from National Geographic and animators from Pixar are among those trying to get the cyclorama built.
It's elective cinema. If you and I were both in the room, you might float towards one part of the story unfolding, one area, and I might float towards another. It's different than the bilateral deal you make when you go to the movies, for instance. What we're interested in is creating a medium which comes closer to the experience of reality.
That may sound far-fetched, but NYU's Red Burns thinks that Ross could pull it off.
What he's doing is working with every aspect of the technology to create something that he didn't even think of before. He's got the mind of an inventor, and he's got the imagination of a Da Vinci.
But Da Vinci never had to line up millions of dollars, which the cyclorama is expected to cost. Does Clifford Ross really think it will happen?
We've got some of the top people in imaging and in the arts and in thinking about public policy and science, all believing this should be built. Now, we all could be wrong as a group. Do I think we're going to fail? No, I don't.
For Studio 360, I'm Andrew Adam Newman.
You can find out more about the i3 Cyclorama at studio360.org.